BitCo is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity. For business, for life, for you. And being connected is everything. So network with a Tier 1 internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. bitco.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
Running a business keeps you on your toes. Wouldn't it be great if your internet connection could keep up? Introducing Business Class Fiber from Vox. It's super fast, reliable, and highly cost-effective. You get unlimited calls to all SA destinations, and it's scalable. So no matter the size of your business, you've still got room to grow. Get connected with Business Class Fiber from Vox and see what super fast internet really means. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Thank you for downloading the Tech Central podcast. My name is Duncan McLeod. Now, I'm in downtown Johannesburg today to speak to one of South Africa's most influential chief information officers, Ashley Veazey of Barclays Africa Group, the parent of Absa. Ashley, thank you for making the time to talk to Tech Central today.
Thank you, Duncan. A pleasure to speak to you and your listeners.
Now, there's plenty to talk about in the hour ahead, so I'd like to dive straight into it. But Ashley, your formal title is Group CIO and Chief Digital Officer of Barclays Africa Group. You're formerly CIO and Head of Technology and Operations at Standard Chartered Bank in Hong Kong, and also a former Chief Operating Officer of a company called McLaren. Now, this is not the car company. I believe it was a dot-com startup. Is it still around?
I don't know what's happened to those guys, to be honest with you, Duncan, but it was a really fantastic period back in the late 1990s, coming into the turn of the century when we had the original dot-com boom, and then it all went a little bit dot-gone, and so I decided to get back into banking. But a great experience working in a startup of two or three people. I learned a lot back then, so a passion of mine now played through to working with young girls and guys who want to build their own businesses with the fintech industry. So that's really helped me in the latter part of my career right now.
Okay. So apart from the sojourn into dot-com territory, have you always been in the banking space and the financial services space?
Yeah, I've always been in financial services. And I think what's been wonderful about my experience is it can take you to just some amazing places. And I've worked in the U.S. on Wall Street, so you know the movie The Wolf of Wall Street. That was a period of time I spent there working for a couple of investment banks, through to wonderful places in Europe like Spain, working for agricultural banks, consulting to a number of companies in Scandinavia, and then 15 years in Asia working in very diverse markets from China to Vietnam to Singapore and Hong Kong. It can provide you somebody with a really interesting and widespread set of opportunities in all aspects of technology, and then coming to Africa as the next great place to work. So I'm really pleased to be here.
How long have you been with the group now?
With Barclays Africa Group and Absa for 3 years now.
Three years. Yeah. Okay. So a lot's transpired in that time, of course, at a corporate level inside Absa, and we all know that the Barclays Africa Group is going through a process of separation from its parent Barclays. Now this must have a big impact on the IT operations. I remember speaking to IT executives at this bank over the years, and there was a lot of talk after the deal happened about all the positives of being able to integrate with Barclays and take advantage of their systems, etc. And I know a lot of work went into actually doing a lot of integration. Now you're going through the process of separating again. It must be a bit painful. What does it involve? How much work do you have to do, and how is it affecting your team here?
Well, I think firstly, I must say that the relationship with Barclays Bank has been tremendous for all of our countries in Africa. Mm-hmm. We've learned a lot, right? Whether it's how to run our risk processes or bigger aspects of technology innovation, we've learned a lot from our partner there. And now we find ourselves in a situation where we have this wonderful opportunity to take a lot of that learning, plus our own energy and the funding we have to build this new independent organization across Africa. So a very large part of that is technology, and we all know that technology is increasingly becoming the heart of many organizations, especially financial services. And we're really looking forward to this very exciting opportunity to rebuild a number of new systems. You look at our corporate channels, our payment channels, for example, we're spending significant investments there. Looking at our countries outside of South Africa, working with our colleagues there to redevelop core banking systems and our digital channels. And down in South Africa, very important systems such as human resource systems, which will be the fundamental way in which we manage our workforce with self-service and enabling our people to be more powerful in how they engage themselves and also with customers. So we have this wonderful opportunity now with quite a good budget. So I'm really pleased from that front that we can now go out there and fundamentally change the way the bank works with our customers and also internally.
Right. So are you able to use this opportunity then to introduce technology refreshes in the organization? I know banks build up a lot of legacy infrastructure over time, many of them still running old mainframes. Mm. Are you able to, does that keep ticking over the old mainframe systems, or do you have an opportunity now to, with the separation, perhaps to initiate a process of bringing in newfangled technologies into the organization?
Yeah, so there's a lot of new technologies we're deploying as part of the separation. But even before the separation, we embarked upon a strategy to fundamentally change the architecture of the bank and the way the bank works with its customers, which is fundamentally the key important point for us. Is not spending money for technology's sake in bringing in the latest widgets. It's how do we actually use that, whether it's our existing legacy systems or building new platforms or working with fintech providers on the outside to ultimately enhance relationships with our customers and so on. Now, when we look at core banking, for example, there's a lot that's been said around legacy systems, and every fintech company I speak to, and I speak to fintech companies on a daily basis, they all believe there's an edge that they have because they're more nimble. Mm-hmm. But actually, legacy to someone is actually heritage to us. We have very, very stable systems now, which have been built up over several years. And we're looking at how we can enhance those. Some of those will be around for a number of years. In parallel, we're also building completely new systems from scratch. So it'll be a combination of both. There's a very large change program here inside of the bank, which looks at new technologies, some of the existing ones that we have, which are still really fit for purpose. And then we're moving to new paradigms such as the cloud. We've been working very closely with our regulators here to ensure that when we do move our data, our information to external providers in the cloud or internal clouds that we may run ourselves, that it's highly secure, we've pretty much kind of reached really good agreements with cloud providers and our regulators to make sure that we can do this in a very safe way. We're also looking at technology such as blockchain, and again, not necessarily to see how we can implement it for the sake of a new technology, but what can it do to improve the way in which we operate with our customers inside of the bank. So for example, we're running some experiments now on great use cases around trade finance and syndicated loans. In fact, we were the first bank in Africa to perform a blockchain transaction in a trade system from a client in Ireland, it was a dairy customer, through to the trade transaction in Mauritius, in the Maldives. Now, that transaction would normally take 4 days. Mm-hmm. As a result, we are able to do that in 4 hours, and it removes fraud from the process. It removes lots of paperwork, and effectively the benefit is for the customer, for that corporate customer. So there's lots of new technologies we're looking at deploying, and we have, but the key thing again is how do we use these for the benefit of our customers, or how do we improve the bank itself to be more efficient and high performing?
Mm. I want to come back and talk about blockchain a bit later in this discussion, but just talking about IT investment, you've got a big IT budget. What are your key metrics for success in IT investment? What do you consider a successful IT investment?
I think, again, something that brings economic value to our customers, to our shareholders, and to ourselves. Clearly, there's a number of measurements we can benchmark to the industry, cost-income ratios for technology, but we're very, very careful in the bank how we spend money with a defined benefit, which could be something that enhances our ability to improve service for our customers through to new revenue growth, or through to cost reduction and efficiencies. For example, we've introduced a number of bots, which is very basic artificial intelligence at this point in time, with a very good business case to say we can free up a number of positions with our operations colleagues so they can perform more value-added transactions with our customers. They can generate more frontline experiences with our customers in branches or through call centers by automating or augmenting their roles with electronic bots, and we have around 300 or so bots now that are live, and I think it's a great example of something that has a defined benefit. We're also looking at how we redevelop through a design experience our digital interactions with our customers. We have created, and I think we're one of the first banks in Africa to do this, to create a design department. We have a head of design who comes from a completely different industry, from the advertising industry. We now have, I believe, 80 people inside of that team, and they're not the normal type of bankers you would see when you walk around our corridors. These are people who might be from a more bohemian kind of background and have a different view of the world, and they're helping us to redefine those customer journeys, the experiences that our customers are increasingly asking us to embark upon with them. And customers becoming a lot more demanding upon us and our services. They want to bank on their terms, not on our terms. And the designers that we have are helping to build those experiences to engage better with those customers on those terms. And so that's a very good example of an investment which doesn't always necessarily seem to have a defined benefit, unlike employing robotics or bots into our teams. But it has an overall effect upon our brand, how customers perceive us. Perhaps they want to bank with us because we have a better experience than other banks. And so, yeah, we're seeing some very good options on investments, so from cost to revenue, mm-hmm. through to general customer experience.
Okay. You mentioned your customers, their profile must have changed quite considerably over the last 10 years. You've got Generation Y, do they call them Gen Z as well, coming through, the millennials I think they're termed, coming through the system. These are people who are completely comfortable with technology, with smartphones. They almost expect the first touch point with an institution to be through an electronic device. How is that changing the way you as an organization think about offering services to customers? Does it mean much less physical retail, bricks and mortar banking, much more focus on digital banking? How's it changing the paradigm inside the organization?
I think that's a great question. But I also think that we have to think about the wide range of customers that we have. And clearly there's a millennial workforce out there who are very demanding in their own rights, in their own ways. But there's also a very traditional and a mature customer base that we have. We have customers who love walking into branches and striking up a relationship and a conversation with a branch manager or one of our colleagues there. We have some people who prefer not to do that. Okay. And it tends to be actually at all walks in life. It's not just the millennials who prefer digital channels. We're seeing say middle-aged guys, or what would they be, Gen Y perhaps, or Gen X, I forget the terminology, who are actually very, very active on our digital channels, and it's all about convenience. We build a whole new range of apps for our customers. We have apps for younger generations. We have a kids app called Mega U. We have payments apps, which are about to be released into the market. We also have our main banking app, which has been redesigned. And we're seeing that all walks of life are enjoying those digital experiences. But I think, again, it's very important to understand that we, as a bank, intend to provide channels, a mix of channels, or an omni-channel experience to that range of customers that we have and will be acquiring more of. When I look at some of those neobanks, perhaps in the United States or in Europe, which are becoming semi-successful, they're actually realizing that they're lacking one thing, and they're lacking physical touch points to some customers who really do prefer a physical interaction. And I think that's why this omni-channel experience, from physical channels to digital channels to call center or contact center experiences to telephone banking, are very important. And I think as a bank, we have a responsibility to ensure that we're providing those channels, again, which are the choice of customers, to their demands.
I mean, it must be very, very expensive to have all of these channels, especially the physical channel, in addition to all the digital channels. Where is this going over the longer term as the millennials come up and become the new Gen Xs, if you like? Does the idea of concept of a wide network of branches eventually become much less relevant than it is today?
I think that's something we have to assess over time. If you read the fintech press back from, say, 2010, and I'm a member of many Jack groups back since 2005, when fintech started to arrive on the scene, they were all predicting the death of banks and branches in the next 5 years ahead. Well, guess what? We're still here, right? And I think there's a lesson to be learned there, and that we as a bank are reacting to the demands of our customers. And again, I want to really put that point forward. And if our customers are telling us they only want to interact with us digitally, then guess what? We're only going to build digital channels. But they're not. They're saying they want to reach out to us in various different ways, and that's what we have to provide. Mm. Now, the great thing here is that as technology advances and computing power becomes more ubiquitous, the costs go down. So actually, we're very able to provide those channels at the right price points within the bank for our customers. Mm.
Let's talk about the hot topic of the moment, and that's cryptocurrencies and blockchain. You gave an example just now of a blockchain project that you've been working on. There's a lot of talk about, and it comes again from the fintech side of things, but there's a lot of talk about how blockchain is going to disrupt traditional banks. What's your take on it? Is this a real meaningful threat to this industry? Is it going to turn this industry on its head, as many proponents of it suggest it's going to? In broad terms, what do you think the impact of blockchain technology is going to be on the financial services sector?
There's always buzzwords, Duncan, that we hear in the industry. If it's not AI or robotics or Internet of Things and lately cloud and the topic we were discussing now. I think what we have to do is to take a step back, and I think there's a lot of mysticism around blockchain, and the best use case that I think people talk about is cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Fundamentally, it will not, in our opinion, it will not change the world of banking. But what it will do, it will enable banks to do different things in different ways for our customers. And I'll give you a couple of examples. So I mentioned one before about trade. And now, if you look at some of the benefits that blockchain technology brings, it helps banks to reduce paperwork. It can help to reduce fraud, improve security. It helps banks to solve interbank challenges very well, because you're pushing your data outside the bank in a secure way rather than keeping it inside big, massive walls and firewalls inside of the organization. And that distributed nature actually helps banks to work better together for customers. And I think trade is a great example. Syndicated loans is another one. I'll also give you a different type of example, very, very different. We are running our own accelerator program. A lot of the new fintech companies that come through tend to use blockchain technology because of the security and the provenance that it provides for transactions. So there's a great company we're working with up in Ghana. They're called Benben. And they see one of the challenges up in Ghana is that unlike a more developed market, when you land in a plane in the US, you see a house with a sign which says this house is for sale. Typically in Ghana, you might see a sign which says this house is not for sale, because there's a lot of corruption in buying and selling houses in some markets. And I see this in other parts of the world where I've lived as well. People can suddenly redraw boundaries at will. And Benben have found a way to try and bring some transparency into the land property market in Ghana, in this example. We're working with them in a few other countries, but we're starting in Ghana. And what they're doing is they're putting drones into the air over Accra to start with, and mm-hmm. I think they're quite well developed now. And they map out land boundaries, and they then put those land boundaries into the local land registry authority. The fact that they're stored using a blockchain technology means that, guess what? Nobody can change those land boundaries, right? There's no sticky fingers that can push your boundary 1 meter left or right. So they're using a technology in quite an interesting way to bring better transparency and take fraud out of the market there. And for us, of course, we're a bank, and we can help those customers through working with BenBen on a platform for property agents who want to help buy and sell both commercial and retail property. We can help provide mortgage advice and home loans. So it's a great opportunity there for us to. I talk a lot about the word fintegration, how you take financial services and you integrate them with the fintech world. And I think that's a great example. And that's using blockchain in quite a different way.
Mm, indeed, indeed. Just looking at the fintech space and some of these blockchain startups, and then looking at the traditional bank, you're one of the most, if not the most regulated sector in the country, worldwide. You've got a lot of these challenges, if I can call them that, in the fintech market coming through, who are much less regulated, if they're regulated at all. How much of an obstacle is it that you are operating in such a regulatory environment while you're also trying to play in this new innovative fintech arena?
I think that's a very good question. First and foremost, we have to understand that we're serving customers who put a lot of trust and faith in us, that we protect and help to grow their investments, their money. That's the number one premise of banking.
Yeah.
So everything we do has to be, and there will be experimentation, but it has to be absolutely safe.
Yes.
We work quite closely with our regulators in all of our jurisdictions to make sure that the experiments that we run are run in the right way. They're run in a very structured way, and they're run very safely. And I think we've been quite successful at that. For example, in the blockchain example we talked about earlier, we helped to bring, in fact, we were the bank to bring a consortium of blockchain expertise from the United States, where they already had a consortium with the top banks there, to South Africa. And we worked with our colleagues in the other banks, Standard Bank, Nedbank, etc. So APSA led that journey. And we also invited in our regulators to take part in that. And I think we've had two or three sessions to help our regulators understand the potential of blockchain and distributed ledger technology. So we work very closely with our regulators to address the very points that you mentioned. And I think that's been a very fruitful relationship. And we've worked very closely with regulators on a number of other technologies as well. Cloud, for example. We will not put any cloud application out there unless our regulators are 100% comfortable. And then it's all around safety and security. Very fast, but very safe experimentation. And that's the rule of the game for us in banking. We have to do this.
So you can be fast, even in a highly regulated environment.
We can. And I think the fact that, you know, we've got this accelerator down in Cape Town, we call it RISE, it's part of a global network. And we accelerate 10 companies through there on a 6-month basis, and we've had some really good discoveries. BenBen was one of those companies, the one I talked about in Ghana. And we work with them very closely. We've also involved our regulators in certain occasions where we've whether we want to seek advice or we want to bounce some ideas off of them, and I think it's a very fruitful relationship. Mm-hmm. So we've been very successful in bringing some of those companies. Again, it's how do you integrate those fintech companies or fintegration to help us? And I think we're seeing that a lot of fintech companies actually need us as well. We have masses of data in a bank. We can offer integrating the data that we have, again, in a secure way and using the right analytics for our customers. We mix that with some of the wonderful types of technology and the code that are coming out from those fintech companies, and we can produce something that's very, very fruitful. But again, it's got to be done in experimentation in a very safe and structured way.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That trust factor of bank, consumers trust banks. Is that you think, your biggest advantage in this new world? You're operating in a highly regulated environment, but because of that, in a way, consumers trust these organizations. Is that almost your biggest advantage in this new arena where you're facing a range of new potential competitors?
Well, I think clearly that is the premise of a bank, and the Churchill image of banking as a big safe probably in people's minds, or a physical branch somewhere, and it has been a advantage for us, of course, because our customers do trust how we help them to manage their money. And I think that will continue for some time. But of course, there are other aspects that we like to believe banking will add further advantages and benefits for our customers. Again, helping them to bank in different ways on different channels. Again, an example here was chat banking. We were the first bank in the world to launch chat banking, even beating some of the large players out there, the big Chinese banks and the Wells Fargos. Yes, over Twitter and Facebook Messenger.
Oh, right.
And we had this idea in the bank that customers spend probably 70% of their time online on their mobile phones, chatting with their family, with their friends, and wouldn't it be great to have the opportunity to transfer money or perform your banking experiences inside of your chat channel rather than having to come out of the chat channel and open up a banking app. And we've done that, again, new technology for our customers. And it's becoming increasingly popular. So that's more of a strategic play for us. Still, most customers either like to use online banking or our banking apps or walk into apps or branches. But that's an example of how we're starting to see consumer mind shifts of how they want to bank with us. And we responded to that.
I meant to ask you earlier, the bots that you've launched, how has the consumer reaction to those been?
Well, those are more internal bots, and they're more for efficiency. So they're moving paper and they're performing basic checks, which is more an internal efficiency for us.
I understood.
But the side benefit there, which is great, is that we're able to free up colleagues, our operations colleagues, for example, who are then able to have more intimate interactions with our customers.
On Messenger.
Well, yes, perhaps. But whatever the preference, we know those human interactions are very, very important as a banking organization. And if technology can help enable that, then that's only a good thing.
Mm. Just lastly, on the topic of blockchain, and I know this is a very broad question, so apologies for it. But crypto money, cryptocurrencies, what's your view of the rise of Bitcoin, etc., and what role or impact do you think it's going to have on organizations like Barclays Africa Group?
Well, we don't see an immediate benefit for us, and I think it's needs more regulation.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at some of the markets and exchanges that are happening out there. You're seeing very wild swings in those currencies. Mm-hmm. It's not something right now which we are spending a great amount of time on. For us, what's more important is the technology behind it, and that's what enables some of these new things we're talking about, whether it's putting drones in the air and mapping out land or creating new payments networks for our customers in some of our African countries. But cryptocurrencies themselves are not necessarily something which we're investing any detailed research time into right now.
We've seen the rise of crypto exchanges where you can trade these currencies. That's not something that not an area that the bank is looking
that's
at.
That's not
right
something
now.
Right now we're heavily investing money in.
Mm-hmm.
From time to time, we see a number of fintech companies that come under our radar who are working heavily in that research and development. But for the bank now, we have many other priorities which we think can benefit our customers.
Okay. I want to come back to the accelerator program that you're running. There's a lot of names here. There's the Rise, Techstars. What is it officially called, and who are Techstars?
So Barclays Rise is a global network of countries based in, so the countries we have as part of that network are India, the United States, in New York, in London, one in Manchester as well, Israel, and latterly, and we were the last, actually it's 2 years old now, so I make it sound like it's very young, but over 2 years, we've been part of this network, which is an open innovation network where we work with a company called Techstars, who are probably the world's largest accelerator company, and they perform acceleration activities for the likes of, say, Disney, for example. We've been working with them to take in a number of young, bright people with great, very nascent ideas. And latterly, we've been working with more developed ideas and seeing how they can help us to determine the future of banking. And there's a whole range of ideas, as I mentioned a couple before. We have others.
Well, take us through a few of them.
Sure. I'll give you an example. So Social Lender, for example, is a company we're experimenting with internally now in the bank. And Social Lender says that for a number of citizens across Africa, it's very difficult for them to get a loan or access to funding because they don't have a credit score. And traditionally, credit scores are held by banks and with external agencies. And where there isn't a credit score, how could we or how can we find a way to score someone to build that trust factor that we can loan them an amount? And Social Lender have this idea, which is based upon a theory that stemmed from both China and the US, that you can try to predict someone's credit worthiness or their ability to pay back their loan from their social media status. And so Social Lender produce a score based upon whether it's your Facebook or your just some of your searches on Google, but they come up with an algorithm which suggests that you would be a trustworthy person to lend to or not, okay. Right? And so we're experimenting with that. I mean, clearly this is something which has got to be done in a regulated way. So some of those initial experiments are actually looking quite positive. I also know there's banks and insurance companies, for example, Ping An in China, who are also trying to do that algorithm based upon people's facial expressions. Now, I'm not so sure whether we'll be able to do that in the short future, but scanning someone and by taking an image of their face over a period of a few minutes gives an indication as to whether they might be trustworthy. And that's a bit futuristic for us right now, but I think the Social Lender type of fintech idea is something which we will pursue, and that's something which has a very real application for us now. Clearly, with 80% of the population of Africa being unbanked, and then even when they are banked, how do they get access to financial services and to money to be able to bring prosperity to their lives and their businesses? The Social Lender type of idea is one which we're very keen on pursuing.
Okay. Other names, other interesting things coming out of the accelerator program that you'd like to touch on?
There's a whole range. I mentioned Ben before.
Yeah.
There's a lot of ideas around artificial intelligence. Now, we think that artificial intelligence and the use of data is of very big strategic importance for the bank. And we have a number of companies who are in that space right now. And we're looking at artificial intelligence in a number of different ways. How we can produce better analytics to help our customers to make appropriate offers for them, which are targeted at their activity rather than, you know, banks typically might carpet bomb ideas or spend offers. We're trying to see how we can do that more eloquently. People are sent offers at the right time in the right location, for example. So we can use AI for that. We're also looking at how we use AI inside the bank to make the bank more efficient. From time to time, we need to check to see how our systems are performing, and AI can help us to say, well, there may be a problem happening here. You need to get on the job and take a look to see what you can tweak here to make sure we can bring continued stability. So there's a whole range of ideas we're looking at, both external and internal. And a number of these companies we're seeing increasingly are offering AI types of services. They're the ones that come across our radar. Those seem to be the biggest type of plays we're seeing at the fintech level at the moment. And we're also seeing ideas in cryptocurrencies, but we're not necessarily that interested. We're seeing a lot of payments plays in the fintech world. Medtech or medical technology and insurtech are of great interest for us. We're working with a number of companies, but again, linked to artificial intelligence and big data, and how we can help citizens in many of our markets through growth of wealth or insurance plays. So there's a whole range actually that's coming through. But what I think is important to say here is that whilst a lot of these ideas seem great, the purpose of accelerating these companies within a 6 to 8 week period with real use cases, working with our internal business colleagues, has really helped us to iron out which of those have good mileage and which of those don't. And you know, it's great seeing a number of these young guys and girls come in with wonderful nascent ideas, and then seeing how we can help them to find a real business case, a use case that can ultimately help us and our customers.
Okay.
And so for every 10 companies we accelerate through, there's probably 3 or 4 which have really fantastic potential, and we think that's a good hit rate.
Just talk me through what the acceleration actually entails. Do you invest in these startups? Do you take a stake in these startups? How actively involved are you and other executives in the group in mentoring these guys? Is there mentorship coming in from elsewhere as well?
So there's a great program which Techstars run, and we pretty much leverage their expertise, and they've done this thousands of times in many, many markets across the world. And At its core is taking in, and the original experiments for us were with ideas. People with, it may not have been a piece of code, it might have just been a concept. Latterly, we've been working with more established companies. But the idea is that we bring them into a hothouse for 8 weeks. It's down in Cape Town in the Woodstock area. And again, it's linked to this very large network globally, so there's an interchange of ideas. But there's an 8 week very intensive course where we give them help on how to develop their business cases. What's their USP? What technology do they need? We actually help them build technology, which is great for our internal technology colleagues as well, because they can get involved and really help these guys to put some code in place, which helps those fintech companies. We give them financial counseling. We give them advice on how to grow their business, what are some of the basics you need to put in place to be a successful startup. And then it all culminates in demo day, where we give these guys, and it's quite sweet to see some of these young companies, and there's some teenagers in there as well, right? So these are not you know, necessarily experienced business guys. Seeing them stand on a stage in front of angel investors, VCs, standing in front of our chief execs here at the bank, and seeing how they've developed over the past 8 weeks from just a very nascent idea to something that is potentially very marketable. So it brings, I think the course brings the best out of those ideas, and it helps them to produce something which we can ultimately decide if we want to invest in ourselves or not. But again, we're not necessarily interested in the investment opportunities in these companies. We're far more interested in how they can help us to determine the future of banking and onward ideas that will help our customers and our colleagues inside the bank.
I must say, I attended the demo day here in Sandton. When it was about a month ago now, and I loved some of the creative ideas some of the guys came up with in their presentations. It was kind of fun.
Thank you for coming.
Pleasure. So have you invested in any of these companies at this point directly?
There are one or two investments we've made. That's company confidential at the moment, but we're quite pleased with some of those investments. I think we take a very careful approach to investing our money. We will clearly only invest in something that, again, is very safe and secure, in ideas which will help us to help build out our strategy. And increasingly, as we become an independent bank in Africa after our separation with Barclays PLC, we may look to make more investments. But I think we're quite pleased with those that we've made so far. I think we're also pleased with the nature of some of those ideas as well. And what I'm also very pleased with is that our business colleagues inside of the bank are warming increasingly to the fact that we have alternative ideas. It almost feels sometimes here in the bank that there's this overwhelming urge now that we've got the opportunity to be something quite different in the future. It almost feels like we've got to start up ourselves of 42,000 people. And so I think it's very, very, it's an imperative to make sure we bring those fresh ideas from the outside and integrate them into the our world of financial services.
This actually leads brilliantly into my next question, which is going to be about how do banks need to change culturally for the digital world? It must be tough. They're traditionally conservative state organizations, and I suppose they have to be conservative in many respects because of the regulatory environment, because they'd need to create a trustworthy environment. But you're obviously bringing in some of that cultural change with this accelerator program. How else are you trying to drive cultural change, and what sort of cultural change do you want to see, particularly in the technology department at the group?
So aside from looking at external ideas around fintech opportunities, I mentioned before we've created a number of teams. One of them is the design team. But we're creating a number of teams which would not seem to be a normal banking type of person.
Right.
Within those teams. And so we have these bohemian characters. They're probably going to kill me back in the office for calling them bohemian, but they are very different types of people from advertising and design agencies. And they just bring a very different perspective on life here, and how we work together in the bank, but also clearly for our customers and the designs that we're increasingly, whether it's in putting them into our branches or into our digital channels, even into some of our voice interactions, for example. So that design team is working very closely with our senior management team, and that's become quite successful. It's also a different type of person, again, in the bank that we wouldn't have seen previously. These are our data scientists. We've created a chief data officer, and that's a growing discipline inside of the bank where we're taking in a lot of really bright young people, but also fantastic colleagues inside the bank who are very keen to look at opportunities to be involved in data and the potential for analytics. Those were a different type of people, and both the designers and the data scientists have really only grown in size inside of this bank over the past 18 months. But that rise has been quite meteoric. We're talking about a total of just probably shy of 200 people there inside of this organization. I think what's also interesting as well is that something that stemmed from technology in ways of working or new ways of working, the whole agile discipline and thought process, that's clearly something which has come from the world of technology to get colleagues there to work faster together, rather than have archaic waterfall models of implementing systems. We now do those in a more agile way. We've now seen that process being taken into our business world. So our group chief executive for South Africa, David Hodnett, for example, David now runs agile Kanbans every week for a number of his areas. And we're now looking at ways of extending that using Spotify's method of agile and tribes. And after tribes, you get to guilds and other areas. So it's actually quite interesting to seeing how what became a very technology-driven way of working is now starting to move into other areas of the bank and making us more efficient, which, again, is only better for the customer and how we deliver products at speed with higher quality and the greater stability.
I know we've touched on it to quite a degree already, but how is Absa using technology to differentiate itself in the retail banking space? Are there other examples you can give us? And I don't want you to give away your trade secrets, but are there things that technology innovations that consumers should be looking out for in the near future?
Well, I think one other way, which is worth mentioning, is increasingly we're seeing customers, whether they're corporate customers or through to business bank, the small to medium-sized enterprises, and even retail customers wanting to perhaps use financial services for their own purpose to build, perhaps in the corporate world, retail financial services. And what we're looking to do there is to externalize our banking services so we can offer them to those customer sets who can then use those to generate something that helps them in their own business models. So application programming interfaces, or APIs, are a way for us to externalize those services. And we've created a team. It's been in a place for over a year now, mm-hmm. and they've created a wide range of APIs which can use banking services, both at the corporate level all the way down to SMEs, and even potentially for retail customers as well. So I think that's a trend we're seeing in the industry. A lot of banks overseas have done that. We know our other colleague banks have done that here as well. And I think looking to the future, I think that's a great way for how the new fintech companies can work with banks, and they can share those APIs to build newer models, which effectively democratizes banking and it becomes open banking, which is great for the economy and for the citizens of Africa.
We've obviously seen how mobile money has had a huge impact, not so much in the South African market, but certainly in the rest of Africa, especially up in East Africa, of course, where M-Pesa is huge. In South Africa, it hasn't been as successful, but mobile payments, what's happening on that front? Mobile money, do you see the telecommunications operators as a serious competitive threat? Where's that whole space going?
There's a lot of companies, telcos, banks, who are very much into this space. We've seen a few announcements recently here in Africa, in South Africa, of new entrants into the market, and some very large investments being put in there. I think from our perspective is that it's a very complex market, and if I had a crystal ball now to tell me how mobile payments would look in 6 months to 12 to 24 months ahead, I think it would still be cloudy. I don't think I'd have a clear vision. So what we're trying to do here at Barclays Africa and Absa is to experiment, again, as I mentioned before, I always put in that word, experiment safely, with all different types of options. Mm. Now, the fact that we work in a number of different, we offer services in a number of different markets, which are quite different in nature, enables us to experiment quite rapidly and quite widely. And what we might look at in mobile payments and wallets, for example, in, let's say, Tanzania, through to what we might do here in South Africa, could be very, very different. And we can do those, and we have done those, in partnership. We've worked with telcos in the past. And again, that's great for citizens out there as well, which is one of our main drivers, to ease access to payments, or it could be using very different types of technology. So we have a number of investments which we're making. A lot of those are solutions we're building ourselves, and we're experimenting. There's one we'll be launching very, very soon. In fact, there's two we'll be launching quite soon, over the next few months, and we'll be watching those experiments very, very closely. But very difficult to predict how that market will turn out.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Ashley Veazey, this has been a fascinating, wide-ranging discussion. Thank you so much for your time. Ashley Veazey is Chief Information Officer and Chief Digital Officer at Barclays Africa Group. Thank you so much for a fascinating discussion and for joining us on the podcast today.
Thank you, Duncan. It's a pleasure.